Bryan. It's That's Life with Mark Snyder. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Mark.
We saw barely legal lesbian vampires, The Curse of Ed Wood.
I hope you enjoyed it.
It's very strange. That's okay, though. Strange is good.
Well, in the world of B-movies, you never know what you're going to quite run into.
You have all these other films. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see them, but
yes.
the lingerie party one looked very interesting.
Yeah, we're working on that now. It should be out, hopefully, in late March, Sandy Hook Lingerie Party Massacre. It's about seven strippers who rent a house down the Jersey Shore, not realizing that a hurricane is about to strike. And our serial killer, as part of a legend of the Sandy Hook Lighthouse, comes a creeping and a killing during the hurricane season.
Now, that must be a really tough job, assembling seven beautiful women for these films.
Oh, it's actually harder than one actually might think. It's a little bit sure they're running around and we're all having a good time and the finished product hopefully is enjoyable to everybody. But it's when you're an independent filmmaker and you're working on a very cramped budget, it does take a lot of effort because you're relying on a small number of people to get the job done, and you don't have the luxury of a lot of time. It's not like when you're doing a big Hollywood movie, it might take you 6 months to shoot. Here you've got to do it in 10 days or less, usually.
Mm. You know, one of the things that's interesting to me as an outsider to the goth scene is how popular it is. I see a lot of the kids into it.
Absolutely.
What is it that's made this so popular?
Well, you know, I've been a fan of horror films and of the occult. In fact, I'm quite a recognized expert, believe it or not, on the paranormal. I'm also Mr. UFO. I was raised in a house that was haunted. We had poltergeist phenomenon, you know, lights going on and off and doors opening and closing. And one time there was a big chinaware, a big plate on the table, and it slid across the table and fell onto the floor without breaking. So I kind of grew up around this stuff, and there is a lure of death, there is a lure of the supernatural and of the unknown, and I think in a lot of cases we try to have fun with this because deep down under the skin we're really scared. But I think also too the interest in the goth too revolves around the music and certainly the dress up. Remember in the 60s, of course, we had the hippies. Everybody wore their hair long, and we wore beads and other the flashy clothes and tie dyes and what have you. And today it's another way of for people to express themselves. And it's certainly a great opportunity to get into the whole macabre aspect of the occult and vampirism and horror movies and enjoy it and go out and meet other people who are into the same venue as that.
Now, rumor has it that some of these women that are in these movies really are vampires.
That could be the case. I wouldn't want to say it, but yes, I've known people before this was even popular who were very much into the vampire or the goth scene. Yes, they could be, but you never, for the most part, you never really know until the sun goes down.
The problem, of course, nowadays is checking the blood before you eat it.
I would think so, yeah.
I would think so, too. This is, it's for me, a whole new ball game. In fact, you sent a magazine here,
mm-hmm.
Draculina,
yeah.
Yeah, some weird stuff that's going on, but it seems to be popular. And again, you mentioned the music, and a lot of this music definitely drives this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me ask you a little bit about your own background, because you are, of course, the executive producer of this film, and
right.
Also you have created a website.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk first of all about the films, though. How did you get into films? What was your training?
Well, actually, most of everything that I've done in life, I had no training for. I started out after, back in the mid-1960s, way before it was very popular, I started putting out a newsletter on UFOs and the paranormal. And it started to grow in circulation, and there was a publisher in New York who approached me with an offer of taking over the magazine subscriptions and hiring me as an assistant editor. So I had no experience really in editing per se. I was 17 years old at the time. In fact, in high school, I just about failed English. Anyway, I took the job, and I ended up becoming a stringer for the Inquirer and for the Globe, the tabloids, which were a little bit more into the paranormal and the UFOs and things along that line back in those days. And I started working in the adult industry. For 2 or 3 years, I was the movie review critic for Hustler magazine. So I started meeting people in the adult movie business and in B-movies. Those days...
I just want to try to find out where this juxtaposition came from, going from UFOs editing to adults.
I consider myself in the entertainment business. So I realize that most people, when they fall upon a career, they stick pretty much with that. But I've never believed in that. I always figured that I was pretty multi-talented and had a lot of interest. And I get bored with anything if I do it for a long stretch of time without kind of fluxing my intellectual muscle. So I made a movie because I felt that I could do a better job than all these other producers were doing back in the early 1980s. It was called Driller. It was the adult takeoff of Michael Jackson's Thriller. But instead of the beautiful the girls from California with the tans and blonde hair, we had zombies and werewolves and a lot of weirdness going on in this very adult film. And it was kind of funny because people in the adult the business really didn't know what to make of it. It was a whole new the genre by itself. Now, we were lucky to get the... whatever few play dates were left of the drive-ins, because they had been, of course, very popular, and then all of a sudden, real estate became very valuable, and the drive-ins were closing, and apartment buildings were going up in the huge super malls. And in those days, there was still Times Square. In fact, one of the websites that we're involved in is virtualtimesquare.com, where we've tried to actually recreate the old feel of Times Square with the movie theaters and the hot dog vendor and the thousands of people walking through there and buying and looking at adult goods and so forth. So I just kind of made the movement over to making movies, but I still remain very active in the publishing business as well. It's just kind of my company is called Global Communications, so this is kind of just an offshoot of that, and it's something that I always enjoyed doing. When I was growing up, I loved watching television and horror films and always wanted to be a horror host, so I just kind of created my own place in life there, horror and death or whatever you want to call it, you know.
It's a cool idea. I like it a lot. And Virtual Times Square is a lot of fun, too. Folks should check it out, virtualtimesquare.com. How did you create the character of Mr. Creepo?
Well, Mr. Creepo, in this movie, Driller, we had a hunchback, Quasimodo, who had kind of a strange voice and kind of ran after all the actresses and kind of just stumbled around through the life. And when I started doing this, I figured, well, geez, you know, why not build a character around this? And it's partly kind of, it's me. It's one of my various personalities where I can kind of lurk around in the dark and peer at people and be a voyeur.
Have you got involved at all with any of these actresses in your films? On a personal level?
Over the years I have, not currently, but you know, it's kind of an interesting thing. People think, well, we call it the casting coffin instead of the casting couch, but you know, like being in show business is like any other business. You build relationships and you build friendships, and some of them last and some of them don't last. It wouldn't too much matter whether you were in the insurance business or in the movie business, you know.
Well, if you ever need a guest radio guy.
Oh, why not?
It'd be one of those films. I'd love to do that. That'd be so much fun, and we could write about it and promote it all over the place. Yeah. But again, the site is virtualtimesquare.com, and the movie I have in my hand is called Barely Legal Lesbian Vampires.
And also, the virtualtimesquare.com is a paid site, but there are previews up there. We have our own MrCreepo.com. That's MrCreepo.com, and that's a free site, and you can even win a free video and subscribe to our newsletter on there.
Now, I assume that these videos are available in stores?
The Mr. Creepo videos, they're going to be released in stores shortly. Currently, they're only available on the website.
Okay, well, if you go into
later on in the year.
If you go into your adult bookstores, make sure you tell them.
These things now, the videos, Mr. Creepo's videos, are not hardcore. They're what we call B-movies. We're bringing exploitation back into films where they belong.
Exactly, but I was going to tell people, if you can't find them in the stores near you, just ask them to call Global Communications in New Jersey and get them that way. Right?
Right.
All right. Thanks so much for coming on, Tim.
You're welcome, and watch out on stormy nights.
And make sure that I get a copy of that new one when it comes out.
You betcha.
Take care.
Bye-bye.